Hello, and welcome to Black Marriage Therapy, BMT for short. Here we become students of marriage in order to create healthy, long-lasting relationships. I'm your host, Kristen Smith, and in today's episode, we discuss longevity and transitions in marriage with Sean and Lynette Reed. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Black Marriage Therapy. Today, we are so excited because we have some special guests. We have Sean and Lynette Reed with us. And today, we are going to be talking about longevity in marriage. I think that a lot of people want to be married for a long time. I think when they get married, they expect to be married until they're old and gray. But what does that look like? Mm-hmm. You know, like, what is the real life? What can we really expect from longevity in marriage? I feel like we've learned we're only like halfway where you guys are, right? We've only been married about 12 years. And from where we started to where we're at now, we're like, huh, this is going to take a lot more work. There's a lot that comes with making sure that we can get to where you guys are and even further, 25 years of marriage. Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. That is so, so beautiful.
Okay. It is indeed.
It's a milestone. I'd say it's definitely a milestone.
100%. Okay. And for me, in our background, we don't have, I don't know anybody who's been married in my family that long. So I think you have one aunt who's been married a long time, two aunts. But other than that, we don't have that background. And I think a lot of our audience and people that, you know, listen to us also don't have that background either. Like, where do we start from? You know, so yeah. I really want to get into your story and just start right off the bat. Like, you guys have an amazing story and I want our listeners to hear this. We heard a little bit of tidbits, but I'm like, I heard year one could be very interesting. So I want to hear about year one of your marriage.
Yeah. So year one was a trip because we actually met in high school. And so somewhere around sophomore, junior year, we met. And by the time senior year rolled around and we were about to graduate, she got pregnant somehow, you know.
And making it sound like I was sleeping around.
You know, somehow, you know. And so we graduated in June. We were talking about marriage, but that really sped things up for us. We wanted to be together, but we weren't going to do it that fast. But then all of a sudden having a baby on the way. I was like, I looked at her and honestly, this was my proposal. It was not romantic, but I just asked her, I said, do you see everything in me that you would desire to have in a husband? And she was like, yeah. And she didn't turn around, flip the question.
Asked the same thing. And he said, yeah. And so we got married September of 98, graduated high school, 98 of June. I started college that fall, got married in September, had Brandon, our first son, in December of 98.
Yeah.
So we were 18 years old.
Yeah.
And we grew up very quickly.
Yeah. So year one was nuts because you know what I mean? You're still trying to figure out who you are. And yet life is life. And you got to hurry up and take care of these responsibilities that are just like the baby has to eat, you know, got to get raised. And we have to figure out how to co-parent. And we're moving into our first place. So it was a lot of pressure. Self-induced nonetheless, but it was still pressure, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah. So I dropped out of college or put it on pause. Put it on pause is a good way of saying I dropped out of college. And was a stay-at-home mom. And then, of course, he went to work. And even though those sound like very small things, I mean, for a bunch of 18-year-olds who had just got married, just had a baby, that was a lot.
Yes.
It was a lot of navigating. So we had some challenges, financial challenges, relational challenges.
There were no finance.
There was no finance.
We were broke.
Oh, the truth. Okay.
And I know sometimes, like, you know, we talk about childcare expenses now, and they are expensive.
Yeah.
They were expensive then to us, especially because we were broke. So we were trying to navigate, like, finding ourselves and then trying to financially get our footing, you know. And at that time, you know, we were aspiring to figure out where we wanted to be, where we wanted to live. And so literally our first apartment that we ended up getting into, it was a shotgun apartment in the ghetto, in the hood. We aspired, both of us, we aspired to accomplish more, and both of us refused to settle in that first year. So I would say that even though we had a lot of challenges against us, we had a lot of hope, and that hope was able to help us keep going and persevere in spite of what we were dealing with, you know?
We ate, slept, hope too, and faith. We got married at 18. We were broke. We had a shotgun apartment, just like you. Your story resonated with us so much. Yes.
Wow.
And wow.
We were eating and sleeping hope for sure. Because we got married at 18, and we also lived in a hood, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We went to sleep to some, you know. And we were in the city. We were in the city. So it was like, it was crazy. So a lot of faith and a lot of hope got us through.
We just first. Like you, we slept on one side of the bed because we couldn't utilize the whole bed because the termite dust from the roof.
Wow.
With dust all over yourself.
Wow.
Over a little bit. Yeah. Mattress on the floor type stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know in your story, you're talking about the water dripping on you. So
There were some in that first apartment. There were a lot of great firsts, right? Because that was our first apartment, first Christmas, first kid, all the things. Man, there were some, I will call them horror stories. I mean, because I was very naive. I grew up two-parent home, you know, dinner Friday night with the family. Everybody went to church on Sunday, you know, all the things, you know, all the cookie cutter type things. And when I moved to the city, and I thought it was a bird in the middle of the night, there wasn't no bird.
Bird calls, because it was hustling going on the corners, you know.
I try to encourage our listeners and the people who follow us that, yo, there is suffering sometimes, there's sacrifice, there are transitions where we're going to talk about that can take years, right? And I don't, it's hard sometimes to grasp at year one because we're like,
what we're having, this person's never going to hurt me and this person's never,
right? But then, you know, it takes, when you realize, okay, we're in year five and we are still working out this specific issue, you know, I think it's sometimes hard for people to grasp. And I know that you guys have your expertise, your value is in all this. You know, I read your book, which is very exciting, right? About transitions, because transitions are huge, you know? So I really want to like flow into that and talk more about transitions. First question is, when did you first become aware of transitions?
Okay, so we had been living in transitions since day one.
Okay. Yes.
But you said, I mean, when did we become aware? I want to say maybe 7 years ago.
It was 10 years ago.
10 years?
It was 2014.
Okay.
I remember.
Yeah.
It was 2014.
So very, I mean, somewhat recent. You would think, we realized this. I mean, we've been married 25 years, so we realized this 20 years ago. No. Mm-hmm. Some people would think of a transition of a loss of a job or an aging parent. But honestly, we're talking about not just those, but we're talking about you got a baby. Well, first off, the first transition that you're going to have in marriage is the fact that you're getting married. So that is your first transition.
That's good.
But it could be moving away. It could be having a baby. It could be dealing with sickness in your body.
Hormones.
Hormone changes.
Libidos.
Yeah.
Because when that stuff starts changing, listen. It could be the fact that, and I know this is going to be, I don't know how far y'all want to go with this. Y'all can cut this out if you want. But part of the problem is, like, some people have sex expectations. You know what I mean? You out of something else, or you saw some stuff, or you came out of pornography. And all of a sudden, you in this relationship together, and you got these expectations that are there, and y'all can't get in sync.
Well, you've got one person who was a virgin, and then one person who lost their virginity early on. And just because you're married doesn't necessarily mean that your sex life initially is just going to take off. So even navigating that, it's like you have, for every transition, every couple, every person has their own perspective of the transition.
Right. Yes.
And so being able to be in the habit of vocalizing what you're going through, how you're feeling, what difficulties or challenges you're facing, and the other party sitting across from you and being empathetic, like that alone, getting on the same page of not maybe what decisions need to be made, but just getting on the same page emotionally. If I could have that, it really makes me feel like I'm not in this transition alone.
And that is the point.
That's the point.
That is the point. The biggest thing that hurts, let me tell y'all something. When you go back all the way to the beginning of the book, and you get the first marriage, and God brings the man and woman together. Before the first marriage, what was the one thing that God said? He said, day one, evening, morning, first day, it's good. Yeah. Day two, morning, it's good. Go through 6 days, it's all good. The first time God said something is not good, it is when he said it is not good for man to be alone. Mm-hmm. So I will do what? I will create a help meet for him.
Mm-hmm.
Adam had the presence of God, and God still said that that was not enough.
And he had purpose.
He had purpose. He had God's presence. But the one thing that God said, hey, you as a human being, you don't need to be alone. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you somebody, a companion who's going to do this life with you. And y'all supposed to rule and dominate together. So the moment that all of a sudden we in the same bed, but we don't feel like we're in sync in heart, in the same house, but I don't feel like you're supporting me. I don't know how to tap into supporting you because now you're withholding your feelings. Now you're not talking to me, you're withdrawn. And so as you're kind of giving a trauma response, I start feeling like I'm on the outside. Or if I'm too aggressive, right? And I'm not sensitive to the reality that even though, let's say for instance, we had a situation where, you know, Lynette was diagnosed with RA, okay? And when
rheumatoid arthritis.
Like, so here it is. She all of a sudden has rheumatoid arthritis. I don't feel that in my body. You know what I'm saying? Like that's not a pain that I feel physically.
Mm-hmm.
So I could just be like, what is your problem? You know what I mean? And or I can try my best to say like, that's a transition for you. It affects the whole house then.
Yeah.
So how do I come along and feel what you're feeling and provide support and help you through that situation? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just be intentional, if we could just identify, if we could just be sensitive enough to our marriages, sensitive enough to our spouse, right? Where you gave a perfect example of something happening in Lynette, and that was, you were sensitive enough to that you were able to say, okay, let me make a response to it. Nothing in the marriage had even changed yet at that time. If we could be that sensitive and be able to identify,
That brings me to my next question, actually, because
that's what I
like. If I'm in a marriage, you know, and I haven't heard of transitions, maybe this episode is the first time I've ever heard of transition. What would you say are probably some indicators that you can look around and say, you know what, I think we're going through transition? You know, is it the communication, intimacy? What would you say are some indicators that can help a couple know we are probably in transition? We need to approach things differently.
Yeah. I would suggest thinking through several things. Number one, you can look at your personal bandwidth. Like what is your emotional bandwidth right now? And this is one of the things you can look at your individual bandwidth, and then you can look at the relational bandwidth. And one of the ways that you know that you're in a transition is either individually or collectively, there's a heightened sense of anxiety. And I know there's a heightened sense of anxiety when my fight, flight, freeze, fawn reflexes is all of a sudden kicking in, right? So I know that I'm anxious because I can't stop thinking about something. It's just I'm laying in the bed and my brain's still going.
That's good.
Or my heart's racing. I got palpitations. You know what I mean? My stress levels are just higher. I'm more irritable. These are things that are literally indicators that something is off.
Yeah.
The problem with this most times is that we've been taught, oh, I work best under stress. You know, I'm good under stress. And I'm not saying you can't function with some levels of stress.
We also praise busyness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it even more challenging because now I'm not emotionally in tune, right? So then if I'm at a place to where all of a sudden I got a short fuse and Lynette's picking up on it and she's recognizing that, okay, this ain't a one and done. But this has been like 2-3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Sean seems distant. He's more focused. He's not talking as much. And that means that probably there's an indicator that something's going on in Sean that is changing. And it could be the fact that my workload is too intense. I got a promotion on the job. That sounds like a good thing. Nevertheless, it's still a transition.
Yeah. Yeah.
More money means more responsibility, which yeah. means less time with the family, less time with the kids. Y'all see what I'm saying? So it's like all of a sudden, if I'm aware of the level of anxiety that I'm processing, or another one is this a situation where I'm trying to move on from something that has happened in my life without processing it thoroughly? A lot of times this is what's going on with transitions that's sneaky, because what'll happen is you get laid off on a job, and what's the first thing you got to do? You got to find the next job. The problem is you probably haven't emotionally processed the fact that you feel betrayed. You need to grieve it. You need to go through the stages of grief.
That's good.
And so now you need somebody to go through it with you. Mm-hmm. And your spouse might not be thinking that. They may just be thinking, why ain't you got off your butt and, you know, start applying for some stuff? Let's go. We got bills to pay. And so in that moment, you got one person who feels heartbroken, betrayed, and let down because they've been let go.
And on the outside, it looks like passivity. Right. Or an opportunity to do nothing and be laziness, whereas it's actually maybe depression.
Yeah.
And maybe it's grief.
Transition. Yeah. And so these things are happening consistently. If all of a sudden one person is saying they're just not in the mood to have sex, that's not just a random thing. These are like symptoms of something deeper. Why don't you want to be intimate right now? What's going on?
Yeah.
It's not just a matter. And so what'll happen is a couple will come and sit down with us and they're like, we struggling. They sitting on opposite sides of the couch, you know, we're coaching a couple in it. And they said, no, we struggling sexually. And I'm like, well, okay, describe what's going on. But then now we start talking. And after we realize that what's happening is it's either a chemical imbalance that may be going on, literally, or
a
lifestyle shift. Somebody's libidos are upside down, or one person doesn't want to swing from the ceiling fans anymore.
Okay.
That used to be fun, but now they literally can't stretch as high as they used to. You know what I'm saying? So they're too embarrassed to have the conversation. You see what I'm saying? Because they want to hurt the other person. The other person is just in their feelings because the frequency has changed. So they just lose connection. But what that is, that's a transition. It's called aging. And so because of the fact that we don't talk about this stuff, we don't recognize the change.
Yeah. Wow.
I just want to summarize. Knowing the baseline is what you're saying here.
Mm.
Know the baseline of your spouse. Can you get to know your spouse well enough?
Mm, that's good, babe.
When they're off base, you can tell. And I like the fact that you go digging. You go digging. Because a lot of us will just take the first thing that comes. Hey, babe, are you in the mood? No. Well, I'm just going to roll over. I get to be mad. I get to pout. I get to tell myself stories. I get to be a hero in my own eyes. I'm not going to dig.
Yes.
Because if I dig, I might find out she's mad. Because I'm not digging. Right. And so some of us would even recognize something and, you know, give ourselves a pat on the back for being able to identify. But then we're not doing the extra step to go through and find out what the deeper issue may be. And even
to your point that you just made too, when you said go digging, the problem with Sean at first, we're going back to where I was coming out of a traumatic situation, I would recognize the change in Lynette, but I was too emotionally immature to receive her truth without offense. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if I battle with shame personally, which I did.
Yes.
Because shameful things were done to me, and I had never been healed of that shameful past.
Mm-hmm.
She has constructive critique, but because I'm insecure in, well, does she really love me? And if she knows who I am, will she betray me? Will she bail? So she can't talk to me about normal stuff because there's something going on inside of me that can't handle a certain level of feedback. Y'all get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when you talk about like why certain conversations aren't able to be had, why won't we dig deep? Because if we dig deep, you have to expose some stuff that's going on beneath the surface.
Yeah, no, for sure. Sure. And I think that is the beauty of transitions. And, you know, it's like we have to understand in marriage, especially, you know, those of you who get probably been married just, you know, maybe a year or two, it's like these things are inevitable. But one, it's like even though they're inevitable, there's a way that you can handle it in a way that is going to mature your relationship, mature who you are and grow, right? And that is what we call resiliency. And I think you call it grit, right? And I want us to talk more about that as well, because that is the beauty of the other side of things. We're not just talking about, oh, you know, it's going to be hard and it's going to be, right? But there is some beauty because, as you mentioned, you have grown, you have matured, you have become more secure. And I have experienced that because I say right now, it's funny, but I say it's my turn. In the beginning of our marriage, you know, it was Junior's turn. There was so much that we were coming from, and I put myself on a back burner. And I don't think it was intentional or anything. I was just like, I don't know. I just want to serve my husband. I think he needs to heal. And I just focused on him. And in this stage of our marriage, it's my turn. There's so many things that I didn't expect to be unearthed. I had struggles with shame, struggles with being offended, you know, and like not being able, like him not being able to talk to me honestly. Things that I didn't think were a problem. I'm like, no, I'm perfect. What are you talking about? Right? And he's like, girl, just let me talk for a second. And, you know, it's my turn. But even though it's been painful and sometimes uncomfortable, being on the other side of it, the things that I've gained from it, I'm like, this is what I want to encourage our listeners about, like going through the transition. So I want to talk a little bit more about resiliency or grit. Well, I can give a definition of resilience just to add some context. So the definition of resilience that I have is the capacity to withstand or to recover quickly from difficulty, toughness. The second definition is the ability of a substance or object to spring back into shape, elasticity.
Come on.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I like that. So I want to ask a question, because you mentioned in the book how couples can respond differently to the same thing that's happening, like one person loses a job or something like that. But when it comes to resiliency, can you talk about how each of you have, like, your resilience level and, you know, like how you may have struggled with that, you know? Sorry if that question was
so
janky.
No, I totally get it.
Okay.
Yeah, totally get it. You want to go first? I got lots of thoughts on this. Okay. So when I think about resilience within a relationship, one of the biggest thoughts that you want to have, and this kind of goes back to the hope deferred makes the heart sick thought. Mm. When you haven't expressed your hope and the picture of how you think things should be within the relationship or within a vision for your home, what you end up with is unmet expectations, and that leads to perpetual seasons of, well, why can't we be here and we're stuck somewhere else? Why can't we be where we hope to be? Mm-hmm. So let's take finance, for example. Let's use finance because I think all of us can deal with money. And if your expectation of success for finance or your hope for finance is that you have X amount of dollars in the bank, your expectation is that y'all make so much money per year, you live in certain kind of house, certain kind of neighborhood, but your spouse isn't on the same page with you.
Mm.
And you don't have a shared hope, then all of a sudden you can have one person who is grinding and is pressing, and you have another person who's just spending money like crazy because they don't see that they're threatening your hope. And so all of a sudden when life happens and the car breaks down or the refrigerator breaks and money should be there, that's not, it's harder for that couple to bounce back because you have one person who's like, if we would have been listening to what I've been saying this whole time, we would not be in this predicament. And the other person is just kind of like, we're going to make it. Everything's going to be okay because they can wing it. So what you have for a couple like that, it's harder for them to grit. It's harder for them to grind through that season because now instead of two individuals focusing on healing a problem with shared vision, with shared contribution as to how we're going to get to a better place, you have a couple that's now hurt by one another, hindering them from their greatest hopes. I hope that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like if Lynette has this goal in mind, that's a deep desire in her heart for us to get to a certain place, but I'm not supportive of that thing, it hinders the couple from being able to tackle challenges together mm-hmm. and grind it out as a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is you get one person feeling like they're alone in the struggle. I think the other part about bouncing back and then persevering through difficult situations is Lynette and I had to learn over the years, and this is big. I couldn't go retreat into my own world by myself as if Lynette was not a part of the struggle. I had to learn how to have frequent conversations with her, be able to say, hey, this is what we're dealing with. How are you feeling about this?
Yeah.
What do you see concerning this problem? And the more that she and I began to communicate on a frequent basis, she and I were able to persevere and bounce back a whole lot faster. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't offended by her perspective anymore. Mm. I know some couples, they're going through struggles, man, and they'll be going through it financially, sexually, whatever. And I'm like, when was the last time you guys got together and talked about it? And it's like 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm like, so y'all financially going through it. When was the last time you had a budget meeting? Oh, we don't talk about the budget. I'm like, well, why not? Because the last time we did it, it turned into an argument. Mm-hmm. You had one argument about the major problem that your life is circling around because you didn't like how that one argument turned out. You won't touch this discussion at all. Mm-hmm. And so, they've given up on it. So that couple doesn't have the grit, the resilience to say, mm-hmm. we can talk about really difficult things, disagree. And if we get triggered and it turns into a fight, man, go back, cool down, come back together with greater techniques, but keep on talking because without that communication, you can't overcome that circumstance.
You can't propel forward. I think, when you get on the same page concerning an issue, you can have different methods of resolving the issue, and that's okay. But if you never come together to discover where you are, you can never gain traction. You can never get forward. Like, so one person, if you have two different methods and you're not talking, but both of you have resilient type mentalities, you're just further pushing yourself away from one another.
That's good.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the point is to keep that same grit, keep that same resilient mindset, but you got to make sure you come together so that you can forge forward in the same direction.
Hey, friends, how are you doing socially? As spring is rolling in and there are more events and gatherings to attend on top of your daily tasks, it can feel overwhelming and it's so easy to spread ourselves thin. How do you navigate the new season? How do you recharge? How do you set boundaries? When do you rest? Therapy can really give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. You know, therapy is not just for major traumas. It's about learning positive coping skills and setting boundaries to be the best version of yourself. It's been a game changer for so many people, including myself. So if you're considering therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, super convenient, flexible, and totally suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And hey, you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Ready to find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp? Visit BetterHelp.com/blackmarriage today to get 10% off your first month. Trust me, it's worth it. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/blackmarriage. So the grit is really like what I'm understanding is the couple's ability to like continue to face that issue until it's resolved. And I like that you mentioned also the togetherness piece of it, right? Because if you have two strong-willed people or with that personality where it's like, we know how to bounce back, but you're not coming together, connecting again, then it's just like you're missing the point of being able to like continue to face that challenge until you find that resolution.
Yeah, I love the fact that you... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, because I was going to say, because we don't realize that it's not just the two of us in the marriage, but we have the presence of the Lord as well. And when two or three are touching or gathered together,
come on,
he'll be in the midst and he'll direct our path, right?
Yeah.
And so like whatever plans we have, however discombobulated they may be, if we can get on the same page and acknowledge God, then he can give us insight. He can give us the wisdom, and then we can move forward.
That's good.
To that point, though, a lot of times the voice of God sounds like your spouse.
Ooh.
And that's what we don't like.
You got to say that again. You got to say it again because people will go into a prayer closet before they listen to their spouse.
You see what I'm saying? But we've been asking for revelation. And what I'm saying is, we're like, God, tell us what to do. And we're praying about the spouse that God is actually giving us wisdom through. A lot of times the voice of God sounds like your spouse. A quick thought on that is, you know, we said this to a couple the other day. We were talking to them and they were like, man, sometimes it's just frustrating. And I was like, well, what's the frustration? It's like, well, we think so differently. And I was like, it's in the different that you get the best discussion.
Mm-hmm.
If you marry somebody so that they can give the same answer as you, what's the point in that? Mm-hmm. The fact that they are different, it's in the diversity that you understand, like for complex problems, for complex emotions, you need the uniqueness of their perspective, their way of thinking.
Yes.
And it's in the tension, not, oh, we always think the same. We always want the same food. We want the same color furniture. We want to, they're just me. We just always, and you think it's this utopia, you know what I mean? This idea that's romanticized that like this person and you just have chemistry because you always agree. Stop it. It's not realistic. You're supposed to be different.
Yeah.
It takes work to stay unified.
Yes.
It takes work, people. It takes multiple conversations. Mm-hmm. It takes circling back around. It gets triggered and then you got to relax and then you got to circle back around. It takes apologies. It takes humility. It takes listening, active listening. It takes reflection. It takes all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And in that, all of a sudden you begin to realize God has gifted you with someone who is different than you.
Mm-hmm.
Their uniqueness makes your journey better. One of the greatest victories of marriage and transition is that I realized that I have the gift of ever discovering Lynette as she evolves into the best version of who God has made her to be. Some people are mad because they look at their spouse and they're not what they used to be at 18, 23. And I'm like, bruh, did you really get married with the thought that this person was going to be the same 20 years from now? They're supposed to evolve, but that's why they're still chaseable. Because you haven't figured them out yet. You don't know all there is to know about them because they're still discovering stuff about themselves.
Yeah.
That's why you can keep pursuing and you keep chasing. So when he gives you somebody that you can have for life, you really can have them for life because they're constantly changing. And the goal is to chase them as they evolve so you can discover them on their next level. Mm-hmm. And so that takes work.
Wow.
I love that. That was beautifully said.
Yeah, it was wonderfully said. I mean, you gotta let that breathe a little bit. You know? I love the fact that you mentioned the conversations, the coming back to it, the apologies, the all this stuff that I feel like I'm gonna gender this as a man, I wasn't prepared for. And that's what I wanna bring up real quick. We do have an episode on how to have the hard conversations. Y'all need to go listen to it, people listening. Because that is the blueprint for the good times and the bad times.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are thinking, like you said, oh, we just need to agree on the same color furniture. We just need to agree on the same number of kids. We just need to agree on where to live and we'll have a marriage. We'll have a family.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is you get the best out of the diversity of the two, right? Out the delta, what's different between you two.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know how to have these hard conversations, whether they're good or bad, right? I think learning how to have hard conversations in good times, in bad times, is going to help us continue to see the beauty of us coming together as one.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we're no longer afraid of that. We're not afraid of the differences. We don't think our marriage is going to explode because he wants to go left, she wants to go right.
Yeah.
We expect it. We normalize it.
Yeah.
And we know how to get the best juices out of that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely.
To power our marriage forward.
To your point, I just want to add something to that. So y'all go back and listen to that episode. One time somebody said something to me and it was interesting. They said a lot of times relationships don't fail due to a lack of passion. Mm. They fail because of a lack of processes.
Mm.
And I was like, whoa, that hit me because sometimes we're questioning our spouse's love for us after difficult times. And it's not that the person doesn't want it as bad as you because it seems like they've given up trying. Problem is they don't know the process to try again without being hurt.
Wow.
So it's not giving up. They don't have a lack of passion.
They don't have a method.
They don't have a method of being able to do it without triggering you or them being triggered. And so you get stuck.
They get stuck.
That's what we find happens over years. And so some people, they settle. They're just like, it is what it is. It's going to be what it's going to be. They had that mindset. And Lynette and I, thank God that we did not settle. We couldn't. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have determined in our minds, we made up in our minds for our marriage, as it is how. What we've said for us is, like, an average marriage is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. When God told me I can have life abundant. Mm-hmm. And so we will invest in whatever it takes to get to a place that she and I are not settling for dysfunctional. I don't mind the tension.
Right.
I don't mind the complexity of having to work through problems.
Yeah.
And average marriage to me is one where I've given up the chase and the pursuit of authenticity for both of us within the relationship. She should be free to be herself. The greatest transitions that we face, and now you mentioned the juices that you get out of all of that, the juiciness of the transitions now is that the problems are less important than this person next to me.
Yes.
Feel me?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to discover her as we go through this journey together. And in the past, the problems took the driver's seat in the relationship. And we got so in our feelings about the fact that we saw the problems differently, mm-hmm. that hijacked the intimacy within the relationship.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, it's pretty much you have to be okay with someone having a different of opinion.
And different strengths and different preferences.
They're just not you.
Different ways of coping with struggle.
They're just not you. That's not you. They're just not you, you know? No, that really is. Some people struggle with that.
No, because it's easier if you think like me, I want you to be me.
Yeah.
It's easy if I'm sitting across from me right now. Mm-hmm. We could just decide where we're going to eat right now, right here, right now.
I think that they make the difference of the person bad.
Yes.
They say, well, because you're different, it's bad the way you think. It's bad the way you feel. It's bad that you have that opinion. And as long as you're seeing them with that bad, like, that's how contempt comes, you know, where it's just like, well, I think less of you because you think differently. You have to be able to be like, no, they're different. I can accept that. And that could be a strength in our marriage.
Of course.
You know, but I'm glad that you mentioned the benefits, because I want us to transition to now kind of the tips and advice to those who, you know, maybe in transition or, you know, finding this out for the first time. The first thing is, what if you were talking to Sean and Lynette in year one, you know,
go to trauma therapy. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Ask your question.
What advice would you guys give to, you know, your younger selves at that stage about transitions or resiliency? What would you say to yourself?
The first thing that came to my mind is, and you'll probably change tomorrow. Mm. And you'll probably change in another month. And you'll probably change next year.
Mm. Get used to it.
So you have to be okay, not just with the changes in marriage, but with the changes within.
Because honestly, Lynette was harder. What I learned over time was Lynette was harder on herself than I or anyone else ever was.
Yeah, I didn't need anyone on the outside to tell me that I need to strive a little bit higher or do a little bit better. I had my own little gauge on the inside of me saying, step it up, do this, do that, right? So for me, I would say embrace the change, welcome the change, almost even accept or expect a change. And then probably take your time in getting the footing. And there's probably so much other points and tips that I could tell myself.
Yeah.
But that would probably be the biggest one.
That was Grace. Good.
That was good.
That's Grace. I love that.
Grace.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This one's hitting me hard. So recently I did this thing. It was a self-authoring exercise. So I'm 44. And I went back and did pretty much six significant events of 6-year epochs in my life. So basically 1 through 6, what can I remember? What were major significant events that happened? So 6 per, 6 years. So I did 7 types of, so 42,000 words, right? I wrote it all out and I sat down with my wife and my kids, who are now all adults. And this was the week of our 25th wedding anniversary celebration. So this is last year.
Wow.
So last year, September 5th, a couple of days prior to it, I sat down with my family. I said, I need 3 hours of your undivided attention.
Wow.
And I want you to give me whatever response you want to give me, but I need to read for you. It was 1,000 words per significant event that I went through, and I read them my history, trauma included. That was the first time that I had ever shared with anyone my entire story.
Mm-hmm.
Period. The thing that helped me get there was a couple of years back, I started this journey of learning the power of connection through my story. Mm-hmm. For years, I thought in my mind that if God knew it, that was enough. Mm-hmm. And what I started to, so I always confess things to God. But what was true about God was that God would give me forgiveness, but he made healing come through confession to another human.
Come on.
And I devalued that because I never was really taught that. So God says, if you confess your faults one to another, you may be healed.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, like, I wanted God to fix it for me. Like, forgive me and heal me. And God was like, okay, I'll heal you when you're bold enough, brave enough to tell it. And so I couldn't settle for that anymore. So if you're going back and you're saying, Sean, what would have made a difference? And I don't regret my journey, you know what I mean? But like, what is the lesson learned? If I can go back and talk to 18-year-old Sean, 19, 20-year-old Sean, I would be like, tell it, talk, tell it. Because you're as sick as your secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And Lynette did, she had the capacity to participate in my healing if I would have been brave enough to invite her into my story.
Mm. You just gave me goosebumps. Oh my God. It's so beautiful and it's so powerful because I'm like, why am I so emotional? Because I think that is like part of the beauty of marriage is that like God has given us a community that and within just the two of us, before we even go out there, where we can have healing, and just like to be able to find that safety and that love is just, it's what makes me so passionate about marriage, and so passionate about healthy marriages, godly marriages. It's like, that gave me goosebumps. I'm so sorry. And I think as a child, I'm thinking as a child's perspective, like we want to know our parents' story. We want to know who they are, especially as we become adults. And I'm just thinking, like, from a child's perspective, like, I'm pretty sure you can tell me, but like your children, that changes your questions and your curiosities as you're going through life. And like, what did my parent do when they had this problem? What, and it's just like, it's such a beautiful thing. It's something that I'm still searching for with my parents. I've been trying to ask them questions that they just be like, like mum's the word.
Yeah.
I know it's a different generation, but it's that it's such a beautiful, powerful, like bold thing. Like I'm so happy for you that you were able to do that. But then for your family, like
when it happened,
it was so sweet.
Yeah,
you can. It was so sweet. Like you said, they're all adults, so young adults in their 20s, and they had never really heard the details, but by the end of it. Of course, there were tears, but a couple of the statements that they had said.
So I have a son and 2 daughters.
Mm.
So just one for context.
So a couple of the statements that they had said was, I knew something was up with this family member, but I really couldn't put my finger on it, or I knew something was wrong, but I just didn't know. So in him not telling his story or protecting the other family member, it was already exposed. Like they already had an inkling within them that said something was off.
Yeah.
And then our youngest was like, I love how she said, I just want to hit somebody for you.
Yeah.
And he immediately was like, thank you. Like, thank you for getting, again.
That was one of the best statements I ever heard in my life.
Again, it's empathy. Thank you for getting in the trenches with me, feeling the hurt, feeling the anger, feeling all of that. Like, yeah, let's just, we want to hit somebody.
Yeah.
Right? And then do you remember what Brandon?
He said it was the bravest. My son said it was the bravest. He had never heard anybody do that before, never heard of it being done before. And he said that was one of the bravest things he'd ever seen.
I think that's what I want my children to think of me. It was emotional, financial, in every aspect. I hope that one day that they see that I was brave enough to face all those things. And, you know, like, not perfect, but just brave, whether you feel.
And
like
it, and if I could say this to you both, I think what you're doing now is, I think that, you know, I mean, people think about the mountaintop of success, you know what I mean? They think about this event that is somehow going to define them I believe that like greatness, I believe that purpose and bravery is what you do. It's how you get back up again. It's how you persevere. It is the story that you are writing with your daily devotion and activities. And I think that you all are committed to leaving something in the hearts and hands of the people that you are connected to. That's
legacy.
That's what we call legacy. You know what I mean? So we're big on legacy. That's literally what our nonprofit name is.
Talk
legacy
about business. It.
You know, you know, because our heart is that we want to see people leave a legacy of healing. And what you all are doing is giving voice to what I wish my family. I wish my family would have had these resources. I wish they would have been able to have the conversations that y'all are having. What I realized is, like, coming out of where my family came out of, I mean, wasn't nobody trying to hurt anybody. You know what I'm saying? Right. It was
surviving.
Hurt people, hurt people. It was survival. And as I go back generationally, it's kind of wild, but I'll say this thought real quick. But my dad's dad was a sharecropper with a sixth grade education.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, like, I think it was 1987. I remember he passed away, my grandfather. And so it's like, I had barely known him, you know what I mean? Barely seen him. I'd seen him maybe, you know, two or three times in my lifetime before he passed. But to think that two generations ago,
that close,
you in the field sharecropping, to think that now I have three kids who went to college, graduated, you know, with honors, who are serving God, who love God, don't despise the church. You know, they want to serve in it. They want to be missional. They're growing up and now they're serving and they're finding love and discovering themselves. To me, to think of what God can do through different levels of transparency. The silence that was on my dad's generation came from trauma and pain in the generation before him. They didn't want to tell no story because it was too painful to talk about and they didn't have these resources. Mm-hmm. My dad, he gave a little bit more, but it was still better than what he had. My mom gave me the best with what she could and the best with the tools that she had. And so now, Lynette and I, we're without excuse.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? We're without excuse. We can't know what we know and have the tools that we have.
And go to the grave with that. Absolutely.
We can't do it. We have an obligation to say, if we can be healthy, why would we settle for being sick? If we have the choice, if we can live brave and get past it and overcome it, then let's do that.
Yeah.
Because that's the gift of other people's struggles that you're building on. You get what I'm saying? And so for us, we can't waste, even though some of our heritage is painful, we can't waste that struggle. Mm-hmm. We have to let God redeem it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is so beautiful. I think that this is a natural, beautiful end. And I want to give you guys some time and space to, you know, talk about where you're looking ahead. 25 years. Wow. Transitions, babies, careers, everything, right? And you guys are now looking ahead to a different season of life. And I want to hear more about that and what you guys are up to now and share it with the people.
Yeah. So our expectation and our hope is to double what we have experienced in the past.
Wow.
So just on a whole other level, especially now that we have our nonprofit Legacy Maker, we're looking to impact and equip couples and families on a whole other level to do what we did, but in their own journey, yeah. Right? And so writing books and continuing to speak, and then even just in our own lives, bettering ourselves and hopefully depositing more wisdom, more insight into our children so that they can have a mindset to kind of leave an amazing legacy for themselves.
Yeah. So for anybody who, you know, if you're a couple out there and you're like, dude, we need some of that stuff, you know, holla at us. We would love to help you out. We would love to give coaching, love to give advice.
Yeah.
And to my singles that may be listening, We love it. Helping singles. I want you to have a solid vision and a plan for your future. And so for us, that's really, we feel most fulfilled when we get to pour into other people. Mm. And so we want to serve people and help people overcome those hurdles. And what Lynette and I have been uniquely gifted to do is to cut through years of stuff. And get right to the heart of what the problem is and uproot it so that y'all can get back on track like really quickly. So they can reach out to us at SeanAndLynette.com if they want, or info@SeanAndLynette.
All right. And don't worry, because all this stuff is going to be in the show notes. You're not going to miss it. If you're subscribed to our email list, then you're going to get that information as well. And as we always do, we end with a quote. And this Junior chose this quote by Maya Angelou. And it says, "You may not control all the events that happen to you, but you can decide not to be reduced by them. If you cannot make a change, change the way you have been thinking. You might find a new solution," by Maya Angelou. Thank you all for tuning into this episode of Black Marriage Therapy. If you haven't yet, follow us on Instagram @Black Marriage Therapy. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you soon.